This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on our football special before the end of July and get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain access to daily best bets, exclusive betting splits, data from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all of our special edition betting guides, like our new NFL betting guide packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, plus season win totals, futures, props, and awards best bets. It's all in there. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe. Once again, early bird discount, $175, but you have to do it before the end of July. Welcome back. This is Sharp Money. Femi Abebefe, Jared Smith, and hey, our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst, co-host of VSiN Primetime, which you can check out Monday through Friday, weekdays. Obviously, I said that 6 to 9 Eastern time. But this week, you guys, you and Tim are on Follow the Money, so make sure you check that out. Yes. 7 to 10 Eastern time. JVT, how we doing? What's up, man?
I'm good. You know, I'm actually get to go play in the All Star Invitational that Mike Palm puts together, a little blackjack tournament. So I'll be going over there when I'm done here. I'm terrible.
I had to give him a rain check on that. I said, I'm doing Sharp Money, buddy.
Yeah, I'm terrible at it, but hey, I'm going to get some free slot play, so that's all that matters. But I'm doing good. And we got NCAA football coming out later today, so we got a lot going on.
Absolutely. A lot going on. We're going to talk about NCAA football because we have to. This is like for millennial men, this is like a national holiday. But I do want to get your thoughts real quick before we get to the NBA. The Olympic team, the U.S. men's basketball team, played Australia in Abu Dhabi earlier today. Got a little hairy after they had a comfortable lead. They only win 98-92. Australia covers very easily. It was 20.5. They only lose by 6. Any cause for concern with Team USA after yesterday's outing?
I mean, I'm not really ever concerned in friendlies because you just don't know what you're working on, right? You don't know what you're messing with. I didn't watch the game in detail. I was going to watch it a little bit later today, so I only have the box score to go off of. But I do think that overall this team's going to be fine. And the fact that you're a team that is going to be built from your defense first and then going forward, I think it's a really good way to do it with FIBA basketball, right? Like, we know the way the rules are changed. You have a ton of depth up front when it comes to your forwards and your centers. I think you're going to be able to dominate in this format with the way that you play. So I wouldn't take anything crazy away from it. Remember, going into the 2020 Olympics, I believe it was Australia they lost to in the first friendly. Everybody was freaking out, right? The country was in a terrible spot. This is crazy. How is the world beating us? And then they went on to win gold that year. So I think they're going to be perfectly fine. Friendlies, and it's like preseason, right? You never know if the pitcher's coming out and just going, I'm just throwing straight sliders today to work on something. Same thing here. You don't know if they're working on key things just to see how we will work against different coverages and whatnot.
Well, speaking of preseason, Summer League, it's not that, but it kind of feels like the pre-preseason. And we've talked about this before with these kind of offshoot events. There's value, especially if you know the rosters and you've done a ton of legwork with the rosters. And I think, you know, you posted a bunch of it on VSiN.com, but I'm assuming you tweeted out a lot of it as well. Overall, before we get into today's card, like, has this been a normal Summer League handicapping-wise based on the years past that you've done? Is there any quirks, any nuances that we should be aware of?
No, I mean, there hasn't really been anything, like, crazy different. I would say the nuance would be a team like it that's playing today. So the Houston Rockets, for me, have been an auto bet when these lines get hung because they are the highest-rated team out here. You have Cam Whitmore. You have Reed Shepard, who has – he hasn't even hit the ground running. He's hitting the ground sprinting. He has been awesome in his first two games. He's been absolutely unbelievable. They, by far, have the best roster, it would seem, in the NBA Summer League. Now, it is dependent on whether or not they keep playing these guys. Because Cam Whitmore is the reigning Summer League MVP. He was awesome last year, and he is a guy that played for them a season ago and should have a role on this team. Same thing with Reed Shepard. So always a worry there is going to be that maybe we get a report that those two aren't going to play. But today, for example, Jared, you know, I bet the Rockets minus 5.5, minus 6. It's up to, I think, 8.
8.5 now at DraftKings.
Yeah, these things move quick, especially with these highest-rated teams. And that's something I'd recommend. Like, we only got a couple of games left. But for a team like Houston, if that number is going to open anywhere in the range of, like, 4.5 or 5, which is a fair number here in a Summer League setting, I would just almost immediately blindly go to it because that number is going to move up in that regard. But that's pretty much it, I think, when it comes to it. There's not been anything crazy. You know, we're pretty even in terms of favorites and overs and unders and things like that.
Totals, kind of. I'm seeing 170s, 180s. Is that kind of the fair value
pretty
there?
Pretty fair. I mean, you're getting some really extremes. So the other day, actually, I think we had a game in regulation that had 233 points, and then we had another game in regulation that had 140 points.
So, and it's like, the same timing rules. The regular season, same sport.
So, well, no, we have 10-minute quarters.
So shorter.
And Elam ending in overtime. So that's the other part about it. So, but I think it's been really what you kind of expect so far. Evaluate the rosters, as you said, find the best players. And that's really what it is. There's no sweet science. I just look at it and go, Yeah, Rasher's better. And then I bet him. And like, that's pretty much it.
We're hanging out with JVT, VSiN senior NBA analyst, co-host of VSiN Primetime. Check him out on VSiN.com as well with all of his written work. Right now, the summer league favorite is the Orlando Magic plus 450. The Rockets 5-1. They've joined them. You mentioned Reed Sheppard. He's hit the ground sprinting.
He's been awesome.
And any NBA rookie of the year for you with Reed Sheppard? Ooh. Will he have an avenue for that? Because I know the Rockets, they do have a lot of depth there, and some people may think that the team could be a surprising team this upcoming season. Reed Sheppard right now 8-1 over at DraftKings.
So you mentioned why I have some pause with it, which is summer league is one thing, but what's his role for Houston when the season gets started, right? Like, this is a team that's accelerated itself into, you know, its so-called phase three, which is we want to win, we want to win now. And you look at some of these, by the way, we haven't even seen the fact that they have all of this stuff. They could try to get still somebody else. You know, you could go and try to pry a guy from a team with all the draft capital that you have. So I don't think that Reed Sheppard's role is going to be massive. So at 8-1, Femi, that's where I kind of be like, you know, I want a little bit more on a guy who's going to be coming off of the bench, a rookie, with a whole bunch of dudes in front of him and with a team that clearly has a message of compete for a championship now. And so I think once the season begins, you'll probably see his odds drift back out to those double digits because his role's not going to be as big, and then you can go in and get it because maybe his role grows. But at the current price for Sheppard, I would say no. But I'll say this. I mean, I think they got a dude because he's doing everything. Like, you see him, if a guy is going to go you know, going to go under screen, then he's going to pull up. If you're seeing him get a guy on his hip, he knows exactly what to do with him. He knows exactly where guys are. His assists are wonderful. He had 5 steals the other night. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing, man. I absolutely love his game so far. So, rookie of the year, him's not so much. There's some other guys I think are worth it. But I think overall, he's going to be a really good player.
Win totals dropped today. Celtics to Thunder at the top. How about that? Thunder, top-rated win total, at least in the Western Conference. Bottom of the barrel looks like Nets, Blazers, Wizards. And then, of course, you just get, you know, all the teams there in the middle. We've seen some movement already here. Anything jump out to you early on?
Well, I haven't looked at them over yet. What's Memphis?
Grizzlies are in the 40-ish range. Yeah, 46.5, juice to the under.
So Grizzlies are going to kind of be my pick here. Okay. Going, like, I've got a future on them already to win the whole entire thing. They're going to be a team that I think is forgotten in this whole grand scheme of a Western Conference. That is absolutely awesome. But this is a team that last year, they failed because they got unhealthy, right? Like, you had Ja Morant get injured. You had Marcus Smart get injured. You had a whole bunch of dudes working their way back from long-term injuries like Brandon Clark. But when this thing is finally put together and healthy, remember, this is a team that was a top 3 seed in the Western Conference the last 2 years they were together.
Yep.
So I think that the team that is kind of flying under the radar and towards all things, whether it's win total, whether it's to win a summer or to win a summer league too. They're awesome. The roster is actually awesome. But to win the finals, to win the West, the Memphis Grizzlies for me are that team to start looking toward, because I think they come into this season a little undervalued.
Yeah, to your point, 2 years ago they won 56 games. Last year they won 51 games. This past season, obviously the injury has derailed the season there and the suspension itself that's up with Ja Morant. I told Jared there was a team that I already saw that they're winning.
Yeah, I
want to
hear what
one.
This is. What do you
this
got?
Team, of course, is the San Antonio Spurs with Victor Wembanyama. It opened 34.5. Now it's 35.5, and it's still juiced to the over.
Yeah.
Any interest on the San Antonio Spurs with Wemby now going into year two?
Nah, I mean, a little, but I think we're kind of in the range of we're getting a little too high. I mean, look, San Antonio might have some solid upside, and Chris Paul and Harrison Barnes are really good players to add to this roster. I think they are going to be willing to play their role as veterans to allow guys to grow. They're going to be better than last year. But this is still a team that when Wembanyama was on the floor was absolutely abysmal, that still has some questions in terms of its depth. I think I can understand it, but I think this is the summer of the overrated Spurs. I mean, you see the win total where it's at. You see Wembanyama opening $1.70 favorite, -170 to win defensive player of the year, -250 in other spots.
Wow.
Like everything Spurs related for a team that has its win total, for a team that has its odds, is very much smacking of overvalued. And I think I'd rather go in the other direction with San Antonio.
But here's the counter argument. Isn't it that, like, by the end of the season, would it surprise you if Wemby's the best player in the league? And, like, if that's the ceiling for him, usually that player doesn't have a win total of 35.
I think it would surprise me. I would say this. I think our love for Wembanyama is just, but we're also forgetting, like, there was some awkwardness on offense. Yeah. And to be the best player in the league, you've got to be the best offensive player as well. And I think that there are a lot of other guys who you'd still put ahead of Wembanyama. He's got all the makings of doing that, but I don't know if you're going to be at the point where you're taking a team that is going to have a win total 34.5. I mean, look at the teams ahead of them that they would have to, you know, somehow surpass, be better than. In the Western Conference, the Clippers are still going to be an adequate team. We have the Rockets, you have the Lakers, you have the Pelicans, you have so many teams, the Sacramento Kings. there's so many of these teams that are just going to cannibalize on each other that I do think it's going to be hard to push forward, to push for a play-in, win 36, 37 games, do those sort of things. And that's where I kind of have my hesitation. It, you know, kids are still pretty young. We're talking about, what, 19 right now? And I think that's where I would probably kind of draw the line with them.
Last 30 seconds here. I know your affinity for the city of New York. Talk about the Knicks and Jalen Brunson's very unselfish decision last week.
I mean, I think they're the second, like, 2B team in the Eastern Conference. I think that the fit of Paul George, Joel Embiid, and Tyrese Maxey all together gives them a slight edge, and the fact that the Knicks are pretty small at center. Right? You have Mitchell Robinson, but you don't have much else behind him. You're missing Isaiah Hartenstein. To me, that gives like the Philly 76ers a
What if they go out and get someone, though, with that
flexibility?
That's
the question, is who is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I don't know.
But I do think that they have put themselves in position to win a top two seed in the East and be very competitive, obviously.
The New York Knicks win total 52.5 over at DraftKings. Real quick before we let you go, who are you going to be in the NCAA 25 game? What's
Sided,
the program?
Dynasty is going to be Hawaii. We're going to start with Bay. They got like the third best quarterback in the Mountain West. Win total 4.5. It's fair. You know what I mean? Come on.
Okay.
Hawaii to the CFP. Yeah, in JBT's world. All right, we'll be back on the other side. This is Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back. It is hour number two of Sharp Money here on VSIN, hanging out at Bar Canada at the D in downtown Las Vegas. Femi Abebefe, Jared Smith, we're in for Patrick Maher and Dustin Sweetelson. And joining us now in studio to kick off hour number two, it's our buddy Nick Whalen, senior analyst for RotoWire, also host on Sirius XM NBA. I got my acronyms all screwed up there. But Nick, how we doing, man? How's Vegas treating you? We got Summer League going on. It's a good time of year to be out here in the desert.
Fantastic time of year to be out here. You know, you guys know I'm from Wisconsin, so this is a little bit of a departure weather-wise. It's very humid in Milwaukee right now. Yeah, right. It's been fantastic, man. We love staying at Circa. You know, got to hang out with Derek last night. You guys always are great with the hospitality, and nowhere I'd rather be right now. Let's talk some NBA.
I'm sorry, Femi. We're going to have to talk Wisconsin now, but the whole segment's out.
If you want, I can go take a break. You guys can hang out and talk about
Wisconsin. We're going to talk about what's the beer that everybody loves out there?
Spotted Cow.
We're going to talk about that.
Heard of that. What's Spotted Cow?
Bro, it's a local delicacy. It's only sold in Wisconsin. They're very, very careful about it. It's like rumored to be illegal to bring it across state lines.
Wow.
But yeah, if you're ever out in Wisconsin.
Contraband.
Yes.
And Nick is being humble about it, because I think every person I've met from Wisconsin other than Nick has been like, it's like the best beer ever.
It's fine.
I don't drink a lot of beer anymore, but that I'm intrigued.
Yeah. It's fine. So, it's like a 7 out of 10.
Shout out to our listeners in Wisconsin. Spotted Cow. You got your plug there.
I'm not saying it's my favorite beer, but it is my favorite beer.
It's pretty good. I'll admit.
Okay. I'm more of a Moon Man guy myself.
As a beer connoisseur, I worked in Bend, Oregon for a few years. And that's like a beer, like micro brew, like craft beers. Like that's
everyone
their deal.
Loves the micro brews.
Maybe turns into a beer snob after being there. So I do have a distinguished palate when it comes to the beer.
Distinguished palate.
Spotted Cow is pretty
Who
good.
Knew?
But I don't think it's the greatest thing I've ever tasted, but it is good. Let's talk some NBA, though, because that's what people actually want to listen to. Hanging out. We got win totals on DraftKings that just came out yesterday. I was excited. Jared was excited about this. We talked to JBT about it in hour number one. I want to start off with the Los Angeles Lakers, though. Their win total is at 44.5. They made the big move to get Bronny. Obviously a joke. But they drafted Bronny James. They went ahead and got Dalton Connect in the draft. But they didn't really do a whole lot in like free agency. Right. Where do you see the Lakers here in 2024-2025?
So the Lakers win total comes in at 44.5, which seems fair, right? They won 47 a year ago. I think this is a little too high. I think the Lakers had, first and foremost, a best-case health season from both LeBron James and Anthony Davis in 2023-24. Can you count on that in, what is this, year 21 for LeBron James, age 40 season?
Yeah.
Can you count on Anthony Davis to play 70-plus games like he did last season? I don't think you can, and like you said, Femi, this is a team that I think went into the offseason with ambitions. They're thinking, you know, we could land Klay Thompson. That could be the piece that, you know, maybe moves us finally out of the play-in zone for the first time in like 3 years. They strike out on that, and what have they done, right? You bring in Dalton Connect. I think it was a gift for them to get him where they did in the draft. But is Dalton Connect a guy that's really going to be anything more than your, I don't know, sixth, seventh man at best next season? They still have the D'Angelo Russell chip if they want to do something with that, but ultimately, you know, what is that landing you, right? They struck out on DeMar DeRozan. I think that actually would have been a reasonable fit. You know, that's somebody who's been extremely durable, somebody you could depend on in the regular season, which is ultimately what we're concerned about with these win totals. But it kind of feels like their Hail Mary right now would be Zach LaVine, who is perhaps even more of an injury risk than LeBron and AD at this point. So to me, I think if you pencil in LeBron for, I don't know, 15 to 20 missed games, which has been the safe bet over the last 5 years, you could say the same for Anthony Davis. that team is really going to struggle when either of those guys are unavailable. So I think 44.5 to me, that's an easy under.
54.5 for the Thunder, which is a high number.
That is.
Obviously, the success in the playoffs last year, I think it's fair to say the roster continues to be at a high level. But again, you're asking a team that maybe hasn't had that success to basically be one of the best teams in the league. High bar, but you think it's clearable.
I think it is clearable. I mean, they cleared it last season, right? And I think the Thunder went out and addressed by far their biggest need. One of the biggest needs any contending team had, arguably the biggest this offseason, which was getting literally anyone else at center, right? All due respect to the other Jalen Williams, I don't think they want him playing 14 to 18 minutes a game. I think this gives them the flexibility now to play Chet Holmgren at the four. You're not asking somebody who weighs, you know, 220 pounds to go bang with some of the big men in the NBA. I think, did they overpay for Isaiah Hartenstein? Perhaps.
Yeah, great
but
year.
But it filled an absolute need for the Thunder. And, you know, I think the other glaring weakness for this team, and this really showed through in the playoffs, was the Josh Giddey fit, right? And what do? They flipped him to Chicago. They bring in a perfect fit in Alex Caruso. Obviously, he brings defense. But what a lot of people don't realize about Caruso, he's a 40% three-point shooter last season. So you're bringing even more shooting into this team. They brought back Aaron Wiggins. They brought back Isaiah Joe, two guys they've been grooming on that bench unit. And I think this is a young enough team that they're not going to be complacent in the regular season. They haven't won anything, right? You know, you kind of worry about a team like, I don't know, Denver, Milwaukee, these teams that have been through the runs over the years. Are they taking the regular season that seriously? Are they pushing for 60 wins? I think OKC is early enough in its development as a team that they still want to push for that one seed, right? They still want to win 60 games. And the last thing I'll say on OKC, everybody plays for them, right? They don't have injury risks on this team. All five starters last year played at least 71 games. That's a huge concern when you're looking at win totals across the NBA. I don't really have that concern for OKC.
Just real quick on DraftKings, OKC is now up to 55.5.
55.5.
Wow.
They've been listening
to the show.
Did that just update in the last 10 seconds?
No, that updated from when Femi sent me the tweet to today.
Okay.
Hey, but it updated. Or hanging out with Nicholas. I agree with you, though, on the Thunder. I think, like, there's not a bad defender that they're going to be playing in the rotation. Like, there's a chance that they're probably the best defensive team in the league this past this upcoming season. Like, it's going to be a really, really difficult team to play. Yeah. And for teams out west, maybe they go out and capture that one seed and ultimately go a little bit further than they did this past year in the playoffs as they bowed out in the second round. We're hanging out with Nick Whalen, senior analyst for RotoWire, host on SiriusXM NBA. How about the other team in Los Angeles, the Clippers? Paul George now in Philadelphia. There they brought in Derek Jones Jr. Kawhi's health status is always going to be top of mind when you talk about the Clippers here. How do you see this playing out for them?
I don't see it playing out well. I really don't. I think the writing is on the wall already, and it's, you know, mid-July with Kawhi Leonard. I don't think he left Team USA because he didn't want to play in the Olympics. I don't think he would have showed up in the first place if that was the case. If you're already concerned in mid-July about Kawhi Leonard's knees, I wonder what that's going to look like in November and February, and especially April and May, which is when those injuries have really popped up for him over the last couple of years. I mean, Kawhi, much like Anthony Davis and LeBron James, I think he had a best-case health season last year, right? Mm. At least in the regular season, which, again, is what we're concerned about with these win totals. He played 68 games last season. Kawhi Leonard does not play 68 games these days. That was the first time in 7 years that he's reached the 65-game mark. I don't think that's happening again. And, you know, they lose Paul George, of course. Like you said, they go out, they get Derek Jones, they get Chris Dunn, they get Kevin Porter off the street, Nick Batum. None of that really moves the needle for me all that much. And Paul George was quietly fantastic last season. He played 74 games. I mean, he had missed a ton of time, almost as much as Kawhi, over the last 3 or 4 years. And you're taking 74 games out of an all-star, all-NBA caliber player out of that rotation. You're trying to backfill it with a bunch of veterans. I think if Kawhi Leonard plays 55 or fewer games, I think this is a team that could take a big, big step back next season.
Sometimes it's easier to pick the teams that are going to suck than the teams that are going to be good.
Yeah.
I always say it's easy to maybe say you're not going to be good this year. And that's how we feel about the Wizards, huh?
I don't know how you could feel any other way, man. No disrespect, of course, to the Washington Wizards, who do they do roster by guy Johnny Davis, who might be going down as like one of the worst top 10 picks in a very long time.
I was
going
to say, do you still have any stock left there?
No, I have liquidated all of my Johnny Davis stock. Yeah, that's a penny stock at this point. But I mean, this team won 15 games last year, guys. How are they adding 8 more wins? You know, the win total's at 22.5. You know, their best player in terms of VORP, you know, which is essentially war for NBA, was Tyus Jones last season. They're openly talking about trading Tyus Jones. I don't think Alex Saar is going to be a winning player right away. Mm. I think, you know, as far as number two picks go, I think the numbers are probably not going to look like a typical number two overall pick. They brought in Jonas Valanciunas, just an all-time sad signing. You know, I don't really know what that accomplishes. I guess that raises your floor to some degree, but, you know, he's somebody who's taken a couple steps back over the last few years. I think their best or second best player in terms of impacting winning last season, Denny Avdia, He's now in Portland. You bring in Malcolm Brogdon, who I don't even know if he's still on this team opening night. And if he is, you know, you pencil him in for like 38 games. I think this is a team that should want to be bad. That's the other thing, right? I mean, you have a prize in the 2025 NBA draft. It's going to be a completely different scene from what we saw in 2024, where it felt like nobody wanted the number one pick. Washington should absolutely want to enter the Cooper Flagg sweepstakes. They should they should want to make sure that they're a bottom four team next season. And I think if you think they're winning 24, 25, 26 games, I don't know if that's going to do it, right? Because there are other teams that are going to be vying for Cooper Flagg. And I think the other thing you have to consider with some of these bottom feeders is just the overall depth of the NBA right now, right? I mean, there are so many teams, especially in the Western Conference, that want to contend, that view themselves as contenders. I think there's like 12, 13 teams in the West that think they're making the play-in. It's not quite that severe in the Eastern Conference, but if you're a team like Washington, it's hard to find the wins on the schedule, right? It's like you only played Detroit and Brooklyn so many times. So like, where are those other wins coming?
Capture the flag is what everyone's going to be trying to do at the bottom.
Capture the flag.
I love it. I love it.
That one there. Yeah, we had suck for luck. We had all these things. It's capture the flag.
Capture the flag. Pretty good.
That is fantastic.
Did you come up with that?
No, I stole it from somebody. Okay. I don't know who it was. I saw it on
social
media.
Whoever came up with that deserves a raise.
They do deserve one. That person was not me. Real quick here, we've got 90 seconds left in the segment. You're going to hang out with us, talk some NFL in the next segment. But I have to ask you about the San Antonio Spurs. Their win total opened 34.5, already up to 35.5. What are your expectations for Wemby and the crew in year two?
So we're talking about adding, 14 wins to the San Antonio Spurs. And I am all in on Victor Wembanyama. You know we do a lot of fantasy at RotoWire. We have him as our number one overall player next season. That's over Nikola Jokic, over Luka Doncic, over SGA. I think the statistical ceiling from Victor Wembanyama, I think, is unlike anything we've seen in terms of what he can do defensively. I mean, he could be a 25-14 guy with 5 assists and, you know, 4 or 5 blocks per game. That's not out of the realm of possibility. The question is, did they add enough around Victor Wembanyama? And as of right now, I don't know that they have. You know, bringing in someone like Harrison Barnes, like that's a nice veteran presence. Is that a guy that's helping you all that much in terms of regular season wins? I'm not sure he is. I like Stephon Castle a lot, but, you know, he was, a 28% three-point shooter at UConn last season. So I think that the Spurs are going to take a large step forward. I think we're going to see a monster individual season out of Victor Wembanyama. I would be a little bit skittish approaching the over on that win total.
Yeah, but
skittish on your Spurs.
I was telling JBT, I was like, at the end of this upcoming season, will it surprise anyone if Wembanyama is the 100% best player
him.
In the league?
No.
JBT said it would surprise him. I was like, this guy, he makes quantum leaps every single year. I just think that this is something that we've never seen before. Like, he's a praying mantis, 7'5" with a step back three.
Like, I'm with you, Ben.
It's insane. So I just think, 35.5 for maybe the best player in the league. We've never seen that. Right. So that's kind of my thing on the San Antonio Spurs, even though you probably are paying a little bit of a tax. But I don't think the tax is high enough. That's my opinion. Nick's going to hang out with us on the other side. We're going to talk some football. He's got futures bets, NFC Championship, AFC Championship. We'll break it all down next year on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, go ahead and get your VSIN Pro subscription. It's an early bird price here in July, but you have to do it before the end of July. $175, almost 50% off the monthly price. With that VSIN Pro, you're going to get the exclusive betting splits data. You're going to get the betting systems analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and all of our special edition betting guides, including our new NFL betting guide. This thing dropped a couple weeks ago. If you don't have it by now, you're sleeping. You're already behind the market. Win totals, futures, props, awards, best bets, you name it, it's in there. Once again, VSiN.com/subscribe to get it done and get that early bird rate for $175 by the end of the month. This is Sharp Money. Femi Abebefe, Jared Smith hanging out with you guys, in for Patrick Maher and Dustin Sweetelson, hanging out with Nick Whalen, gracious enough with his time to spend 2 segments with us. Nick, of course, with RotoWire and SiriusXM. We talked NBA in the last segment. Now let's talk some National Football League. I was talking with Jared earlier. Hall of Fame games, 2 weeks from Thursday.
Crazy.
We're going to be there with the Texans and the Bears. Bears lane 4, by the way. I can't wait for just to have football on the screen, even though it won't really be NFL football. It'll be players wearing NFL uniforms. But, hey, it's football nonetheless. Before we get into your bets, we're going to talk about the NFC South a little bit later, but we want to get your thoughts on this. Looking at the market, Falcons odds on favorites, -115. Bucks 3-1, Saints +340, Panthers 11-1. Is there anything bettable for you in the NFC South?
I still think the Falcons at -115 is a decent number. I think this was a division that last year nobody wanted to win, right? It took until week 18 where I guess, you know, the Buccaneers were like, all right, I suppose we'll take it. And, of course, it worked out for them. You know, they got a wild card win. But I think Tampa and New Orleans, to me, are similar teams in some ways. They're kind of running it back with the same core. You know, you don't love the quarterback play for either team. I think Atlanta's the only team in this division to me that you could really sell me on the upside, right? If things break right for Atlanta, they could break very right. This could be a 12, 13 win team in a best case scenario. And by a lot of metrics, they have the easiest schedule in the NFL this season. I mean, some of their out of division opponents, obviously they play Carolina twice. That's a nice bonus. Mm-hmm. They get Pittsburgh, they get Denver, they get the Chargers, Minnesota, the Giants, the Raiders, Washington. I mean, these are all very, very winnable out of division games for the Atlanta Falcons. Getting rid of Arthur Smith, obviously that's massive. But this entire season will in a lot of ways hinge on the health of Kirk Cousins, right? I think if Kirk Cousins comes back and looks like Kirk Cousins, who was quietly having an elite season, arguably the best statistical season of his career prior to the injury last season, I think this could be a very, very good team. This could be a borderline dark horse Super Bowl contending type of team. Huge upgrade at quarterback, of course, over Ritter and Heinicke. Their defense quietly took a huge step forward last season. I mean, they were 7th in defensive EPA last season, guys. They were 28th 2 years ago. So it's not just the Cousins piece. You know, everybody's back in on Kyle Pitts in fantasy. Everybody's back in on Bijan Robinson, Drake London. I think the defensive improvement coupled with the addition of Cousins, assuming he's healthy, I think to me at minus 115, a team with that level of upside, that's a pretty nice bargain.
Yeah. The thing that concerns me with the Falcons is just you mentioned the Cousins thing with just the injury. And how about these first three games? I know Pittsburgh, right? You're favorite at home to Pittsburgh. But then at Philly against the Chiefs on Sunday night, like, you know, 1-2 is very possible there.
Yeah.
And what do those division odds look like week 4 against the Saints? Obviously, those next two games, those next three games,
massive.
Saints, Bucks, Panthers, those three divisional games. Yep. That seems like where the division numbers really going to go up or down depending on the results. I might be a little – because I want to see at least a week with Cousins, right? Because, like, how much do the division odds really go up or down if they do start 1-2 after those first three games? Like, you might get plus money in that scenario. Is it just the injury that, you know, you're not as worried about the injury to Cousins, or do you think they can overcome that in a tough part of the schedule early?
I think you're right that maybe the play is to wait until week three. I mean, they're 2-1 at best.
At best.
They could very easily be 1-2, like you said. And I guess I'm not just going to assume that there's going to be an Aaron Rodgers level disaster with Kirk Cousins. I think the fact that happened to Aaron Rodgers in week one last year now is putting people on higher alert. Sure. You know, it's like, well, it happened to Aaron Rodgers. It could happen to Kirk Cousins. Yeah, it could. It's unlikely,
of course.
Right? It's unlikely.
I think the betting on an injury to occur is harder than to actual handicap the development of a recovery. Like, we're going to know week one, week two of preseason.
Right.
Hey, is Kirk feeling good?
Right.
And if he's not, well, then I really feel trepidation considering how tough that early part of the schedule is.
No, that's true. And look, in a disaster scenario, if Michael Penix is starting for the team, they're probably not winning
the
division.
The drop-off's pretty significant there,
I would say. It is, but it still might be better than Ritter and Heinicke last year, right? I mean, this was a team that scuffled their way to 7 wins. They probably should have won 9 or 10 games last year. I mean, they threw away so many games throughout that schedule. Again, it's about the upside to me with Atlanta. It's
like high ceiling, I agree. Right, I agree. There's a high ceiling.
Yeah, the best case scenario for New Orleans or Tampa Bay to me is like, I don't know, 9 or 10 wins, I guess. You know, I just don't think those teams have the same level of ceiling.
Tell you what, if Michael Penix is not better than Desmond Ridder or Taylor Heinicke, they need to fire everybody in the building.
I agree.
Like, that's like, they used the 8th overall pick on him. I still don't understand that selection. You should surround Cousins with more players, but hey, they're thinking about the future as well. We're hanging out with Nick Whalen here of RotoWire and SiriusXM NBA, talking some National Football League here. The NFC, I think this is an interesting one, because I've been kind of like, who do I pick in the NFC? And we wrote up our guide. You might like this since you're a Wisconsin guy. I picked the Packers to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. But, I mean, I think everyone feels like they're trying to go against the Niners here. Like, are the Niners vulnerable? And if they are, who do you like to dethrone them in the National Football Conference?
I think on paper, the 49ers are not vulnerable. But we also saw this team win two games that they probably should not have won. En route to the Super Bowl last season. They probably should have lost the Green Bay game. They absolutely should have lost a Detroit game. And, you know, we just talked about not wanting to forecast injuries, but Christian McCaffrey has an injury history. He's had two very healthy seasons so far. He's been an incredible workhorse for this team. Can you depend on that? Can you depend on Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, other guys with storied injury histories as well? And it almost feels like San Francisco is kind of running out of chances here, right? You know, it's like things have broken so right for them in the regular season, at least over the last couple of years, that you're like, can this really continue, right? It feels like another team is primed to rise up. I don't mind the Eagles at 7-1. I'm with you on Green Bay, by the way. I'm almost hesitant to get too excited about this Packers team. And
all you need is love, man.
If you run into anybody else from RotoWire, they're going to want to talk to you about Jaden Reed and Romeo Doubs and Dontavian Wicks and this unbelievable receiving corps for Green Bay.
Josh Jacobs going to have a 1,500-yard season, right?
Yes, yes. We love Josh Jacobs, but I think the Eagles at 7-1, I'm a believer in them getting this turned around, right? I mean, this was a team that started, 10-1 last season. We know what happened at the end. It was a complete disaster. It was one of the bigger regular season collapses, I think, truly that we've ever seen, right? I mean, a team that looked like they were rolling. They were the primary challenger to the San Francisco 49ers and just completely lost it. But I think they're going to regroup. You know, they're bringing back all of their core players, right? I don't mind a little sprinkle on Jalen Hurts, 16-1 for MVP. You forget 2 years ago, he was the runner-up. I actually thought he should have won it in 2020.
Probably would have if he didn't get hurt.
Right, exactly. I think he should have won it in 2022. He was the odds-on favorite, guys, after week 12 last season. And, of course, the collapse preceded that. But I think the Eagles are in a really good spot to run it back here. Adding Saquon Barkley to this roster is going to be fantastic for them. And this is by far the best situation that he has ever been in. I mean, you're bringing in an elite weapon who I think still has two or three prime years left. Obviously, you're worried about the injuries with Saquon. But to me, I think Philadelphia has the second best roster on paper in the NFC behind San Francisco.
Bengals seem like they're primed, if Burrow's healthy, to make another run. But again, we're kind of guessing on the injury front here. But is there a spot in the preseason or a spot in the early part of the regular season that you're like, okay, I feel comfortable now? Or are you okay pre-flop to risk on Cincinnati?
I'm okay with it because I don't know that the number is going to increase unless they get off to yet another slow start, which
has
played
the Patriots in week one.
Well, that's the thing.
I think they feel good about that win.
They play the Patriots in week one. They play the Commanders in week three. Yep. They play the Panthers in week four, right?
And first 6 weeks, they should be 5-1.
They should. You have to go to Kansas City in week two, but
that's the tough game.
It is. It is. But they should absolutely be 4-1 at worst coming out of that stretch. I think they're going to crush New England in week one. That's going to be a super popular Circus Survivor pick.
Oh, yeah.
This team has challenged Kansas City better than anyone when healthy. And, unfortunately, it's not just Joe Burrow when we're talking about the injury risk. It's T. Higgins as well. It's Jamar Chase, who's been banged up. But I think they had about as bad of injury luck as they could have last season. Burrow came into the year banged up. Obviously, he has the wrist injury. They still won 9 games. There's a lot of infrastructure on this team, I think, beyond the big names. They beefed up the offensive line this offseason, trying to protect Joe Burrow a little bit more. And I like what they did as far as letting Joe Mixon go. That had run its course at this point. You bring in Zach Moss, who's been one of the most underrated backs, I think, in the NFL over the last couple of years. We saw some flashes from Chase Brown last season. And Jermaine Burton, getting him in the middle rounds out of Alabama to replace Tyler Boyd, I think that is a really nice high upside pick. Somebody who, if you're in a deeper fantasy league, you should keep an eye on. Tyler Boyd, one of the best number 3 receivers in the NFL over the last few years. He was on the decline, I think, kind of getting some new blood, perhaps grooming him to kind of be the T. Higgins successor after this season. This feels like kind of the last dance for Cincinnati. Not that they're not going to compete beyond this, but I think this might be their best chance, right? Because they're probably losing T. Higgins after this season. I think they sense that opportunity, and if they stay healthy, to me, they're the primary challenger to the Chiefs. Mm.
The primary challenger to the Chiefs, at least the last few years, has been the Buffalo Bills. We've got a few seconds left here. Their win total set at 9. Looks like you're going under on that one.
I like the under on the Bills. I've even been considering, Bills not to make the playoffs. You can get that at close to plus 150 right now. They had to scratch and claw their way to 11 wins last season, guys, with an incredible run, 5 straight wins at the end of the regular season. You're asking a ton of Keon Coleman to just step in and, hey, be Stephon Diggs for us this season. We'll see.
Of them.
Right. I mean, Gabe Davis.
Fill both of them.
Exactly. They made no replacements. The schedule is brutal. Out of division, they get the Jags, the Ravens, the Texans, the Chiefs, the Niners, the Rams, the Lions. Whew. There's you look up and down that Bills schedule. There's not a lot of, all right, they're going to for sure win that game type of matchups.
I'm ready for the National Football League to get back, man. Just like with the little segments here, they give us that kind of juice. He is Nick Whalen. Check out all of his work there over at RotoWire and SiriusXM. Enjoy Vegas, buddy.
Hey, will do, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, good stuff there. All right, we'll be on the other side to break down the NFC South, starting with the Atlanta Falcons.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't already done so, make sure you check out Adam Burke's Major League Baseball Home Run Derby article. It's front and center on the newly revamped VSiN.com. There's a new tweak to the MLB Home Run Derby rules, so you got to go ahead and read this article, see who Adam likes, predictions, full-on breakdown, VSiN.com. Check it out.
before tonight's Home Run Derby down in Arlington. This is Sharp Money. Femi Abebefe, Jared Smith, our final segment here on
fun
the show.
Bud.
It has been a fun show. It's flown by here, yeah. Hanging out at the Bar Canada at the D in downtown Las Vegas. Thank the whole crew for being a part of this. VSiN Primetime will be after us, following us. So make sure you stick around for that. Who's filling in for VSiN Primetime? Do we know that answer? Because I know JVT
Joe Cirillo and Dave Ross.
There you go. Yep. So I'm sure we'll get some baseball talk from the two of them to start off with VSiN Primetime. But we do have a Home Run Derby to get to. And just to fill people in on the new format change, Jared, before I let you take the wheels here and map out your pitcher analysis, instead of the bracket 1 through 8 that we've done, all 8 hitters will compete against one another in the first round. Then we will go to the bracket format for the semifinals, where it'll be seeded based on how many home runs that they hit in the first round. So it'll be the 4 most homers, I guess the 4 players with the highest total after round 1 will then make up the semifinals, and then they'll go 1 through 4 with that season. So 1 will face 4, 2 will face 3 on how many home runs they hit in the first round. The tiebreakers will be determined by each hitter's longest home run. So that is the subtle tweak to this year's tournament. No bracket format for the first round, but we'll have a semifinal and ultimately a final. Jared, your thoughts, first of all, but then also break down your pitcher analysis, because you had a pretty nice thread on it over on Twitter.
Yeah, I think those new rules to me, and context, this is one of my favorite events to bet on the calendar. So I'm a nerd when it comes to my sports calendar. I have every month, every event mapped out, green, yellow, red. Red is like high priority. This is red. Usually the rest of the week is green for baseball because I try to take some time off. But this day, this event is highlighted in red. I think it is a very bettable event. I think the psychological element smacks you in the face, pun intended, when it comes to who's competing. Newcomers have had success here, right? We saw Julio Rodriguez had that big first round last year. We've seen other players in their first year win this event. So I don't want to dismiss the debutants, because I do think they can win it. But I think the most, I don't care what your exit velo is, what your hard hit rate is, analytics, this, I don't care about any of that. Here's what I care about. Have you shown any semblance of understanding the format? And do you have a pitcher who can compete with you? Because let's be honest, you can be the best hitter on the planet. If the pitches are like what happened to Adolis Garcia last year, where Tony Beasley, who I think was a hitting coach or third base coach, he was the pitcher to Adolis Garcia last year. Like, go Google search Adolis Garcia, Tony Beasley home run derby and see all the internet memes that were being created about those guys. This year, I actually just got word Adolis Garcia does have an experienced pitcher now throwing to him. Okay. We didn't know that was the of the 8 guys. So I went on Twitter and I mapped out all of the pitchers that were going to be throwing to the hitters. I did just get word that Adolis Garcia did make his choice. And I'm going to try to find the guy right now, what his name is. Franmi Pena. Franmi Pena, who actually was the pitcher to J-Rod last year in his performance.
When he went electric in that first round.
I think he had 40 home runs or something in the first round. It was wild. So Adolis Garcia has ironed out the wrinkles with his pitcher situation. So I think that puts him a little bit more in play to win this. But go to my Twitter, at Jared Lee Smith. I mapped out every single pitcher. The ones that intrigue me the most, I'll give you the upside and the downside. The upside, Pete Alonso. Dave Jouse is going to be pitching to Pete Alonso. He's now a Nationals advisor. I don't know how in shape his arm is. When Pete Alonso last won in 21, he was a coach for the Mets, and he was the one that was throwing to him. So handling that moment, I trust Dave Jouse. The other guy that I really like to the upside in a pitcher matchup to me is Teoscar Hernandez. Dino Ebel is the pitcher for Teoscar Hernandez. He's a Dodgers coach. Obviously, he's coaching Teoscar right now. He's with him every day. But this is his 4th derby. He was a coach with the Angels. He threw to not only Guerrero, but also Albert Pujols. And he also threw to Jock Peterson very recently when Peterson was with the Dodgers competing in this event. So of all the pitchers tonight, Teoscar Hernandez has the most experienced one. This is his 4th derby, almost as many as Pete Alonso's played in. So I think that is noteworthy. And another thing I really like about Teoscar Hernandez, I was doing my research last night and I came across a story in the Orange County Register where Teoscar Hernandez was quoted saying he talked to Shohei Ohtani, he talked to Vlad Jr., getting some experience from this event. He's not going to be swinging out of his shoes like some of the other guys are. He's going to conserve his energy, keep his swing nice and easy. So to me, that's actionable twofold. One, don't bet on Teoscar Hernandez to hit the longest home run. He's not trying to hit the longest home run. Two, I think Teoscar Hernandez is a good bet in this event. I think he makes the semifinals, gets into the top four. You can get plus money right now. I saw Circa hanging plus 155 on Teoscar to get into the semifinals. Do I think he can win it? This is a crapshoot, guys. Let's be 100%. Honest. It's a crapshoot. But I think I'm bullish on Teoscar. I'm bullish on Alonso. Not at the number to win it. I'm a little bearish on Bobby Witt Jr. And I think the reason is not because of his talent. His brother-in-law is pitching to him. This is the feel-good story of the night. Bobby Witt's brother-in-law, his name is James Russell. He's married to Bobby's sister, Nikki. James Russell's father also played with Bobby Sr. Again, there's like this, you know, cosmic connection here.
And Bobby's from Texas.
From Texas, feel-good story, love that. Here's what I don't love. Currently, James Russell is a coach or a trainer at a top prospects academy in Southlake, Texas. Bobby called him last week or whenever he called him and said, hey, how's your arm? Because I'm in this event and I want you to come. And I guess it was like a thing they talked about over time, you know, years ago. Hey, if you're ever in the Derby, I want to throw to you. Well, that sounds good on paper. But now you've got to actually go out there in front of 50,000 screaming fans. You got the L screen set up. You're on the riser. Bobby's sitting there. He's got 3 minutes and 40 swings. You better not miss. So I'm downgrading Bobby Witt because of that. The other guys, I haven't seen a huge edge in their pitchers. Jose Ramirez has his double-A hitting coach who threw to him in 22. The weird thing with Ramirez, he's a switch hitter. He had to bat right in that home run derby because his thumb was injured that year. I think he's got more power from the left side. I think that helps him.
Does he do the Adley Rutschman and like switch
it
mid-round?
I have no idea. I don't like switch hitters in this event, though. I'll be honest. I'm downgrading Ramirez because I think switch hitters are tough. Gunnar Ramirez has the AAA manager who obviously he played for with Norfolk. We saw some video of him getting some BP together earlier this week, so at least they have some familiarity. Yep. We mentioned Marcelo Ozuna also in this event. Jose Yepez, the bullpen catcher. For the Braves, no experience on either side for them. So I would say I downgrade Ozuna a little bit based off of that. Alec Bohm, another feel-good story. He used to play in the Coastal Plains League back in his collegiate days. Scott Wingo, his former coach, is going to be pitching to him. I don't know how Scott Wingo's like. Hey,
isn't this, that cute?
Again, like you get these feel-good stories, but how actionable is it? I would say to the downside, it's pretty actionable. And so long story short, I think Alonso and Teoscar Hernandez are my two favorite bets here. I think Alonso, you're not getting any value with the number. I think Teoscar, you are getting a little bit of value with the number. And I think for hardest hit, biggest exit velo, I think Gunnar would be my choice.
Yeah.
Because I think Gunnar's got the hardest hit percentage of any guy in the field. And I think he's a rookie. I like that he's a lefty. The wind tunnel out there to right field with those panels open tonight, I think makes a ton of sense. So I know I'm kind of talking in circles here, but this is an event that you throw a few things on the wall, you hope it sticks, and you try to analyze it as best you can. I think the pitcher's the best way to go.
Yeah. No, I like you said a lot there, and I think it's a lot of good actionable information. I think many people are probably not thinking about the pitchers when they handicap this event, but that's stuff that you should keep in mind if you're going to be betting this stuff. We got about 90 seconds left, so I'll make mine short and sweet. Like I like Gunnar Henderson to win this event here.
I don't hate it.
I bet him at 5-1. DraftKings has him at 4. Shop around. I think there's some plus 450 out there. I think 4 is okay as a number. It's not the sexiest price because you're betting a guy that's like the second choice or co-second choice with Bobby Witt Jr., but like in terms of the data stuff, Gunnar does check all the boxes when you talk about exit velos and hard hit percentage, barrels, and all that stuff. Like, he's up there. And I think Gunnar Henderson, just this season alone leading up to this point, has been a top three player in baseball. Like, Aaron Judge, I think, has been the best player ever since that April swoon that he had. Now he's been nuclear. Shohei is Shohei. He's amazing. But right there at number three, I think, is Gunnar Henderson. And Shohei and Aaron Judge, last I checked, are not in this event. I think Gunnar has the most pedigree. He also has the third most home runs this season, and he checks a lot of those boxes being a lefty in this park. Like, I think that Gunnar Henderson is set up really well for success. I just like him a lot. I think that this is kind of like not the year of Gunnar, because I think Judge is ultimately going to win the MVP if he stays healthy. But Gunnar has kind of announced himself as an elite baseball player. I think this event is the one where he really puts the exclamation point on that. Give me Gunnar Henderson. I got him at 5-1.
I'll give you a bet I like with Gunnar. I made it on Caesars earlier today. Over 456.5, longest home run for Gunnar.
Ooh, I like that.
Because I think he, again, hard hit rates, the highest, the lefty stroke, the right center field wind tunnel with those panels open at Globe Life. I think over 456.5. make sense for Gunner tonight.
It's going to be a show tonight. Cannot wait to see it. This was a show.
Yeah,
it was a fun show. For our boy Jared Smith, for Wyatt Tomczyk, I'm Femi Befe, and our entire crew saying good luck with all the bets. VSiN Primetime, Joe Schwallow, Dave Ross coming up next.